chilling new original docuseries on Paramount Plus.
Why did he kill his family? The answer lies across the ocean in a woman named Sylvie.
She's a can model.
Where desire leads to deception.
I ended up spending $12,000 and $15,000 a day.
It was addictive.
I can't get you out.
And obsession leads to murder.
Who did this to your family?
You can't really maintain a fantasy forever.
Control Alt Desire. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Tunnel Vision, a show brought to you by USCFootball.com. I'm your host, Keely Orr, joined by Ryan Abraham and Shotgun Spratling. We have a lot to talk about tonight. So much has happened since Friday. It's crazy trying to put it all together. First off, USC lost to Oregon at home in the Pac-12 championship game, 31-24. We'll get into that. We'll talk about what happened next. USC decided to opt out of a potential bowl game, so they're done. USC ends the 2020 season 5-1. We'll talk about that on the whole. What did this season mean for the Trojan football program? And then we'll talk about what happens next. Where does USC go now? There's a lot of questions about that, and I know they probably start with Clay and end with Helton, so we'll get into that. I know a lot of people have questions about that. And wherever you are, wherever you're watching, YouTube, Facebook, or Periscope, put your comments, questions, concern. We'll do our best to answer them. You can also call us 512-4-TUNNEL. Our intern Micah, who's great, is standing by to talk to y'all and screen your calls. You can also tweet at us, hashtag TunnelVision, and I'll put your tweet up on the screen. But guys, like I said, it's hard to believe that the game was Friday. It feels like it's been a while, just, you know, trying to get a sense of where everything stands the last couple days. First off, I guess overall thoughts from the game. Shotgun, let's start with you. Have you watched 9 million times like you usually do yet?
I've watched once, you know, just there wasn't too much to take away from it different than on Friday night. I give the offensive line a little bit more credit than I did on Friday night. They gave Keaton Slovis some time. However, the pocket was being pushed back in his lap a ton. It looked a lot like Oregon knew exactly what was coming. You know how coaches always, there's always the script of plays that they start a game with? You know, there's that old story about Mike Leach when he was at Oklahoma dropping a fake script and then Texas trying to, you know, call plays against that and they being able to score a bunch of points real quick when he was an assistant there. It felt like it was the other way around. Like someone snuck in, stole Graham Harrell's script, and Oregon was all over it to begin with. So USC starts in a 14-0 hole. With Oregon just their defense being on every single play every time. That's why Keaton Slovis didn't have anywhere, you know, was getting pressured because the offensive line was giving him enough time normal for a normal throw, but then, you know, everything's covered up consistently over and over to begin with. And then the USC offense started going a little bit, but, you know, I wrote just kind of a short thing to go in my photos, my photo gallery that I did. They said it was kind of a game of inches. You know, baseball's known as that. Football's more of a game of yards, but there were just those inch plays that USC has been getting all season. They didn't get, you know, the ball, Talanoa Hufanga is tipped around and he can't come up with the interception. Next play, touchdown. You know, Drake London can't get his feet down on the third down catch. You know, so they have to settle for a field goal. Tyler Shuck on third down, the final throw that he makes, he just kind of throws it up, trying to throw it out of bounds, and it goes just over Isaiah Pullamau's hands and through Kanai Malgus. Could have been an interception, giving USC the ball down inside the 15-yard line. Keaton Slovis tries to throw it away. Guy makes a great play. So there's these small things. So when Clay Helton says, hey, we're close, yeah, they're close to winning a Pac-12 championship. They're not close, anywhere close to being in a college football playoff. You know, they're being close to winning against a team that should have been up probably like 35-7 early. And a team that is number 25 in the college football playoff, they're nowhere close to being in the college football playoff. They're nowhere close to being in the national championship. So they're close, according to Clay Helton. That's what he said afterwards. And they are, to an extent, they're close to a Pac-12 championship against a bad team.
Shotgun, I'm going to correct you. They're close to a Pac-12 championship
in a pandemic era where they only have to play half of their schedule and they don't have to play the best team in the South and they don't have to play the best team in the North. Then they were close to winning a championship with all of those factors.
True. Yes.
Ryan, what were your thoughts? I know you wrote a column about that. We'll get to the topic of your column in a bit. But I think my whole thing, Ryan, was if you were surprised by this outcome, you weren't watching this season close enough. Because it just seemed like USC was outrunning mistakes, and they finally caught up to them against Oregon. You know, when you play a team that matches you in talent and is well coached, it doesn't really go well.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of like if you're speeding a lot, and you're not getting any tickets, you're like, oh, you know, I can just speed whenever I want. And then all of a sudden you get a ticket. You're like, what happened? Like, well, you were speeding all the time and you were kind of living dangerously. USC was living dangerously. And when you have a team, you remember those Stanford teams that they would just run the football? Like, they're great with the lead, not necessarily great from a come-from-behind team. USC, with all that offensive talent, they should not have been playing this field position game trying to catch up to this Oregon squad. You want to put those teams in a position to have to play out of their comfort zone. Tyler Shough didn't even throw for 100 yards in this game. Oh. I mean, you're talking about an opposing quarterback doesn't throw for 100 yards and you can't beat them? Like, this is a high-powered offense. You got the best receivers in the conference, some of the best in the country. You have to score way more points than what they did. They couldn't run the football. 28 carries, 38 yards. When you have a limited team, and this was a limited Oregon team that didn't even have their best running back out there, there's problems. And these are the problems, like Keeley said, we've seen throughout the year. So the 1-0 talk and the, you know, barely getting a win over Arizona, which is the worst team that we've seen in a while. They're a 12-game losing streak. Like, USC needed like a lucky play at the end of the game to beat Arizona. You know, there's problems. And I feel like, you know, there was some disingenuous talk coming from Clay Helton about this team and how close they are and all that stuff. This hasn't been a very good team, and they weren't close to the college football playoff. I meant what I said when I said enjoy the win over UCLA. That was a game USC could have easily lost, obviously. Enjoy that win, because there might not be any more, you know, bright moments for this USC football team. Little did I know there wasn't going to be any for the rest of the year, because, you know, they didn't win the signing day battle with Oregon. They lose the game on Friday night, and then they opt out of a bowl game, and they're done with the season. So we've gone from, and Shotgun talked about this, but we're, you know, walking into the studio today, we're sort of like this roller coaster up, not a great roller coaster up, just kind of slow. And then there's no doubt, it just fell off. Like, the roller coaster just ended, the season ended, boom. All of a sudden, you lose to Oregon. Everyone's like upset with, you know, the administration, upset with the coaching staff. And all of a sudden, nope, the season's over, and you just walk away. You're like, what the heck happened? This team was 5-0. And you were trying to get in to talk about the college football playoff, and now it's just donezo. So very disappointing season. I think it's a failure of a season because there were so many advantages USC's way. It's not like the team had to go out and play like Stanford did at the beginning of the season without Davis Mills because of a false positive. They got to play with their best players in any game they got to play in. They got to avoid best teams, you know?
Sure.
Is there any who missed a game that was like, this is the biggest, you know? Keaton Slovis didn't miss a game.
I mean, having your offensive line not practice because of quarantine, that definitely changes things.
We saw Ohio State play, you know, run for 300 yards when they were doing that. So, I mean, this, you know, and they won that game. So, I mean, it's not like that, you know, they had a lot of advantages. Their COVID sucked for everybody. It's awful. It's been the worst year any of us can remember. But as far as the football gods go, USC sort of got, you know, they didn't have to play Notre Dame. They have two playoff teams on their schedule, Alabama and Notre Dame. They didn't have to play them, you know.
Yeah.
They didn't have to go on the road and play Oregon. They avoided playing Washington twice in the original schedule and then in the Pac-12 championship game. And they didn't have to even play Colorado, who ends up being the best team in the South. There was a lot of advantages for USC, and they certainly didn't take advantage of them. That's why I say this was a win the Pac-12 or bust. If you won the Pac-12, I'd be like, you know what, that's cool. It was a weird year. You did what you needed to do. They didn't do what they needed to do this year. So that's why I say it's a failure.
Shotgun, where do you weigh in on that?
There's some disadvantages for them, too. I mean, 3 games in 13 days. Yeah. The injuries started piling up towards the end. That's what happens when you play, you know, several games in a short stretch compared to your opponent having a week off. Even if they are a little shorthanded, you know, they didn't have any of their big stars out. Verdell being out, they still had Dye back there. So it kind of evens out there. So I don't say, oh, they were completely disadvantaged. Don't say they got all the advantages. The scheduling, they definitely had an advantage there. You know, not playing Alabama, not playing Notre Dame, and then not playing Oregon on the road, getting them at home. You know, that should lead you to have a much better record, which it probably did. You know, being 5-1 and having, you know, the, you know, I think it's an 8.33 win percentage versus, you know, having those other teams on your schedule, you're not going to be as good, I don't think. So, you know, it kind of evens out as far as the advantages, disadvantages with COVID. It's, you know, coming down the stretch, this team was, the thing is, like, you, after the first game, we said it's the same team. You know, it's the same thing. Their deficiencies are the same. It's turnovers, it's penalties. You know, the tackling can be an issue at times. It's, you know, will we see progress? And there's some small signs of it, but it was the same team the entire season. So after the first game, and especially after the Arizona game, you say there's no chance this team's making it to the playoff. College football committee is not going to let that happen. You know, USC got treated like a lower class. The Pac-12 got treated like a lower class conference. And you saw what they did to all the lower class conferences today when they released the final rankings and everything. So there was no way it was going to happen. So it was basically like, this was fun to watch if you were a college football fan. Now, if you're a USC fan, it's much more difficult to look at it that way. But if you're an outsider, this was a fun team to watch. Every game's exciting. You never know what they're going to do. They could come back in a game. They did it multiple times. They almost came back in this one. They were just a couple plays away from coming back in this one as well. Even though, like I said, Oregon probably should have been up like 28-7, 35-7 early in this game. If they had a quarterback, this would have been a completely different game. I mean, the second half, they couldn't throw it on third down. It was third and eight, and they ran it three or four times on like third and seven, third and eight. Because they had no confidence in Shuck, and you saw why when he almost threw an interception in the, you know, giving the ball to USC in the red zone on a third down play, just throwing it up. So, you know, it kind of evens out as far as disadvantages, advantages, but overall, this was an entertaining team to watch. Was it a good team? No, but it was, you know, they were fun to watch, definitely. And just, but not for USC fans. And, you know, just kind of reiterate what I said after the game in the instant analysis is, if you're a USC fan, you watch this team and you see the potential, and they just never live up to it consistently. And that's what's so difficult for fans of this team, I think.
Well, the problem too, sorry, Ryan, I want to get your thoughts on this, is it's the reason why I'm a little gun-shy about saying, oh, the season was a failure, is because I feel like that discounts the effort that USC's players put into the season. You could tell that they're playing hard and trying to overcome maybe the deficiencies in scheme or coaching. And in that sense, Ryan, do you feel like these players have been put in a place to succeed?
No, I mean, that's the issue, right? I mean, this is about the culture of the program. This is about the head coach. You've made all the changes you could to the staff around Clay Helton. And what's the one constant? It's Clay Helton. And you know, I wrote a year ago about USC needs to move on from Clay Helton. Obviously, they don't. You could write the same thing now. I mean, it's just not – we love Clay Helton as a guy. I don't think he's a championship head coach. You're seeing the same problems over and over again. And until you change the guy running the show, the culture is not going to change. And that's, you know, that's where this – you know, there's a culture problem with this team. And that's where you are right now. I think – I like a lot of the staff that was added. But you're still got, you know, you still got the main guy running things, and that's Clay Helton. And real quick thing.
Sure.
So if you're playing from a Saturday to a Saturday to a Saturday, what is that? 3 games in 15 days. So you're losing one extra day. Like, I mean, I don't see that as being like the end all be all when you had a bye week anyway. So you had a week off. You played 3 games.
You go out and play, you know, when you get a normal schedule for a football, you have certain days that are acclimated in there to help you rest and re-heal your body. When you're a guy like Talanoa Hufanga, who's, you know, hitting someone 40 to 60 times a game, it definitely has an impact. So when you lose days, just think about when you go out drinking on a night and you're a little bit hungover and you've lost just a couple hours of sleep, but you went hard the night before, it definitely takes an impact on your body the next day, does it not?
No, I'm sure.
Well, I got 6 hours of sleep, and you know, that's not that much different than when I get 8 hours. Well, you did something that was heavy impact the day before, and it definitely has an impact on it. So, the 3 games in 13 days has an impact, losing 2 days of rest.
All right. I mean, that's, you want to give them that, that's fine. There's plenty of other advantages that USC had. And I just don't say, you know, people do that a lot. You know, it happens. You play a Friday game, you're going to have one day, you'll have one extra day. They had a week off that they didn't expect.
And normally when you play on a Friday, then you have an extra day of rest. So you get 2 days extra of rest, you know, or 2 days of rest versus one going into the next game so that you heal up instead of being, okay, well, we're going to just do the reverse. Instead of having an extra day of rest than you would normally have,
I mean, they're 20 years old. They played six games. Like, there's six games. Like,
football is...
It's hard.
It's a wear and tear sport.
They played six games. They are student athletes.
And they went through finals during that time.
I know.
Right. And then the finals were over. And then they didn't have to do anything else but play football.
It has an impact. Is that a reason why they lost to Oregon? No.
No.
Did they come out flat in this game? I think so. But again, it looked more to me like Oregon just knew exactly what the USC offense was running. And that's why they came out more flat than anything else.
Yeah. Now... It's hard. where to go from here? My question, I want to go big picture and then we can jump back into the game, if you will. Looking at the college football playoff rankings that came out today, obviously the final rankings, Oregon is 25. They just slipped in there, but they're not the highest Pac-12 team. Obviously, USC is 17. Now, I want to say this from just an objective point of view. I don't want to say it just because I'm a USC reporter. But doesn't this point back to what if the Pac-12 just did what other conferences are doing and helping out their teams? What if the Pac-12 was just like, you know what? USC, Washington can't go. You're the Pac-12 champion. Here we go. And because if you look at the brand of the Pac-12, it just suffered so much throughout today. It was barely mentioned, and it's kind of just laughed about when I believe Oregon was mentioned as the Fiesta Bowl person or team. So what... Why isn't the Pac-12 helping its team out? I mean, look at Oregon State. I mean, Ohio State. They moved the COVID rules just so that they could play. I mean, I know I sound very biased right now. I would say this if it was any Pac-12 team, but doesn't this go back to help your teams out?
Yeah, there's a culture problem in the USC football program, and that starts at the top. And there's the same thing in the Pac-12, and it starts at the top. It starts with Larry Scott. And if you remember, Dan Weber and I were at the Pac-12 championship game, and you know, Larry Scott has his press conference, and I was doing something. I'm like, Dan, can you ask Larry Scott what's more important, parity or having a team in the playoff? And he said parity, and then he took a lot of crap for that. But that's his real answer. That's his mentality, not realizing that that's going to upset people. He trotted out the year that the Pac-12 won its 500th national championship, and you know, across all sports. At the football media day, the first 10 minutes were talked about the women's rowing team from the University of Washington. Like, those things would not happen in the SEC. That's great accomplishments. Tweet it out. Do whatever you want. But football media day for the Pac-12, that's what you got to focus on. And they would try to, like, tout everything else. And I think he started to figure it out late. He wasn't working with athletic directors at all. He wasn't focusing on football. He wasn't focusing on the main teams. He would rather, hey, Oregon State beating USC, that's a great thing. It's like, the SEC doesn't say that. The Big Ten definitely doesn't say that. They've moved everything around so Ohio State at 6-0 can get into the college football playoff. So to me, it's a culture thing with the Pac-12. But USC has to help itself. Like, they weren't going to get the kind of aid from the Pac-12. They should have just been granted the championship, but you know, going to the Fiesta Bowl and losing to like an Iowa State team, that's probably not going to help the team either. They needed to get more games under their belt, and they were going to play. You're going to eventually play a good team, and once USC played a decent team, they lost. If they played the bowl game, probably going to lose that one too. But USC has to help itself. They have to be the premier program, and then it's going to be the Pac-12's job to kind of build USC up around it. But neither side, in my opinion, has done their job. USC has to be the flagship program for the West Coast to get any kind of recognition in college football. And USC hasn't taken care of their business. And then the Pac-12 certainly hasn't either.
Yeah, just like Keeley said, you know, the Pac-12, if it was on the other foot and it was Oregon that was undefeated and USC was a second place team and Colorado had a dropout or something, then they still should have done the right thing. And given the undefeated team, it just the cachet that it lends for the entire conference, rather than having your champion be number 25, is huge. It's basically what has happened to the Pac-12 is that it has become like a MAC. You know, people watch the MAC because it's fun. It's fun to watch it. You know, originally when the MAC, you know, MACtion started, it was Thursday night football. There was no other teams playing. You know, you wanted to check in just because it was college football and you knew the games would be entertaining. You didn't care who really won or lost. You didn't care who the champion ended up being. It didn't matter on a national stage. That's what the Pac-12 has become. It doesn't matter who wins. It's Pac-12 after dark. Get excited. Something kooky is going to happen. This is going to be fun. It's entertaining. And we play into it, too, because that's the way the games have played out. You know, there's super weird things happen at the end of the game, especially. The refs usually help out with some stuff like that. You know, you never know what's going to happen in a Pac-12 game late at night. So you stay up for that if you're on the East Coast. Not to look and see, oh, that's a national contender. oh, that's Reggie Bush, Matt Leinart. I got to stay up and see. This team's really dominant. They're fun to watch because of that. No, it's going to be a fun, entertaining game. And that's what the Pac-12 is. It's an entertainment entity now, not a conference of champions. Don't sell me on that. Sell me that you're going to be the conference that, hey, this is going to be a fun, silly game. This is a kid's, little kid's birthday party, not, you know, grown-ups, you know, trying to see who can win a championship.
Ryan, your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, we've bashed on the Pac-12 for a long time, and it's not going to change until Larry Scott is out of there.
Yeah.
His conference call we had on Thursday just wasn't very encouraging. Similar stuff where you hear like the same old, just like when we get, you know, conferences with Clay Helton, you're hearing the same kind of stuff. And you got to win, and you got to be a winner. You can't accept failure, you know, and I feel like a lot of the leaders right now are just accepting failure. Like, this is just the way it is. And it doesn't have to be that way. And I feel bad. I mean, there's a ton of fans. We got a lot of people on Periscope right now that, you know, getting in there. Hey, everyone. Everyone hit the like thing if you want. Give us some hearts or wherever
like,
you are.
Whatever.
Subscribe. But if you feel bad, I mean, they're in, you know, we got 23 voicemails for the podcast over the weekend. It was crazy. We're going to do a big, Keely and I are going to do a big mailbag podcast on Monday. So watch for that. So we're going to try to answer everyone's questions as much as we can. But fans are really upset, and they have a reason to be. You can be a little upset at the Pac-12, but you got to be upset at what USC is doing. The talent on this team, and you guys talked about it, the potential is there because this is a team. Would anyone in the Pac-12, would Mario Cristobal trade rosters with Clay Helton? I think he would. And it's close, but I think he would. Everyone else certainly would. But Oregon's, USC's had that talent advantage for a while. You just sort of rely on that. That is going away. I think by next year, Oregon might have more 4 and 5 stars on the Duck squad than the Trojans will have on theirs. Then you got to out-coach them. And that's not something we've seen, from USC. So it's a problem. I mean, this team is way too talented. There's just too much potential there to be where they are. And it's not, just, you know, the 5-1 record is fine. But who are you blowing out? Who are you, like, they should have crushed Arizona. You shouldn't almost have lost Arizona. I mean, that's just what's going on here. You need to see better results from the kind of talent that's on the team. And it's 2020 was sort of set up to be the really good year. It depends on who's opting out or who's going to drop out at this point. I think USC is not going to be nearly as talented as they are in 2021 as they were in 2020. And you're going to have a full schedule, more opportunities to lose. It could get a lot worse. And it might be another long offseason. I mean, who knows? But it's just, this was a year you could have at least sort of built up a little bit of momentum by winning the Pac-12.
Yeah.
And failing to do that is why I feel like this season's a failure. Like, without winning the Pac-12, I think this season is just a bust.
I don't even know whether to call it a failure or success. You know, the fact that they were able to play 6 games is great. When, you know, a few months ago, we didn't think any would be played. So I think that is a success.
Yeah.
I just think it's similar to what we've seen. So I don't know whether you call it a failure or a success or just a continuation of what has gone on in the past.
I think the good point, though, just having a season, we didn't expect that. Just a few months ago, if you said, hey, they're going to play 6 games and play in a Pac-12 championship game, you're going to be like, what, really? Like, that's, and the sacrifices players made, how they stayed healthy, like all that stuff. I don't want to diminish that. The administration put a lot of great protocols in place. They protected these guys. I think they were safer where they were. The fact that they got to play as many games as they did, only having one canceled, and it was kind of a fluke thing that ended up happening. That's all like, yeah, you've handled this, you've handled this successfully as far as trying to make a season that works. I mean, Arizona State missing 3 games in a row, and, you know, Utah missed a couple games, and there's a lot of stuff that just, you know, were kind of out of your control that I think USC did a good job on. But the team itself, the coaches need to put the players in a better position. The amount of talent was there, and they just didn't see the results on the field. That's where I think the failure was.
I think the problem is where USC thinks it should be, and I think where fans expect. And Chuck and I kind of talked about this on Instant Analysis is, you know, you ask Clay, what's the next step for the program? And he says the Pac-12 championship. Well, fans are banging on the table and looking at the college football playoff, and USC has barely sniffed that in its existence, you know? And so I think that's the problem there. But Chuck, as far as failures go, do you think it's a failure? I hate saying that, Ryan, just because I feel like there was so much put into the season.
It's a failure.
Is there a way to separate on the field achievement and what the players and administration were able to do as far as playing college football in a pandemic?
I mean, where USC finished is a failure. Like, not what it, like, this was a year setting the bar here, if you're talking about championships, the generic championships from Clay Helton, you're thinking Pac-12, USC fans are thinking national championship, getting the playoffs, you know, backing in maybe to a Pac-12 championship in a weird pandemic year isn't going to get you a lot of credit, but you had to do at least that, and they didn't do that. So, but it is hard because you know the kind of sacrifices that these players made, the tough decision to want to opt out of the bowl things, and we'll get into that in a little bit. And like I said, they put some really good protocols in place just to try to keep these guys safe. It's tough. I definitely want to separate that and say everything that they did to try to make the games actually happen, the people around the football team to make it happen is great. Then you were given this opportunity to go out and play football. That's the part that wasn't great. And to me, the playing football part, that was the failure.
To me, this was a, you know, a blockbuster movie. A lot of money got spent on it. And you recouped the money. The critics didn't like it. You know, it wasn't a big success. It wasn't a complete bust. But you recouped the money on it, and you say, okay, we'll move on to the next one kind of thing.
Yeah. But you were making, like, Titanic 2, and it was set up to make $3 billion. And you just recouped your $400 million. And you're like, okay, we got our money back. But, like, anyone with any competence would have made this, like, the biggest blockbuster ever, you know?
Sure. Sure, that's fair. Now let's go into what you've alluded to, Ryan. USC decided to opt out of a potential bowl game. Interesting move there. I know there has been mixed results. It was really funny just seeing my mentions go from Friday night to, I can't believe this team and I never want to watch them again, to when I put out that USC had opted out. They were like, what? Why aren't they playing? I wanted to see them play. And it's like, just the fans, you know, the pendulum swing is very interesting. But what were your initial thoughts, guys, when you learned that USC was opting out?
I was just like you, Keely. I was shocked by the 180 in fans on social media and our message boards. Going from good thing we didn't, you know, good thing they lost because they just get worked in a, you know, by a good bowl team in a New Year's Six Bowl or whatever. And then when they're not going to go to an Alamo Bowl, people are like, I can't believe they just passed up a, you know, the opportunity to practice. But I think that, you know, from a coaching standpoint, you need to have those practices. You need to. From a player's standpoint, I completely understand not wanting to play. Because it has basically been 4 months, 3 months of isolation for these players. Now they got their teammates, and some players are built for that. Some players are built to be around their friends and that being it. Other people are either social butterflies, need to be around a lot of people, or just really family-oriented and need to be around their families. You know, so I can understand this, especially during the holiday season. I can understand just the wear and tear that this season, this semester, this everything that has gone on since March has put on these players. And I know a lot of people got really upset about it. And then I kind of wanted to be like, but think about it. If you were isolated at home and, hey, maybe you got one buddy that's over, maybe two buddies that are roommates with you, but you can never see your mom and dad. You can never see your family. Would you give up hanging out with your buddy one more time to go, you know, be with your family for Christmas? For the holidays, I mean, I feel like you probably would. And I was told by a couple of sources that the mental wear and tear had really taken an effect later in the game. That USC kind of came into that game flat partially because of the 3-13, but also just the wear and tear of some guys being in quarantine. Now you're not even around your buddies anymore. You were isolated in a hotel room for basically the entirety of 2 weeks. That's, you know, that's basically like solitary confinement in a prison. You know, it's a little bit more luxurious, but still, you're not allowed to go out and be with anyone else. I think it just, the mental aspect of it really wore the team down. You're trying to do your schoolwork and all that stuff as well. So I understand if it is true that the players did vote on it, and that's what, you know, some people have told us that the players voted on it and they decided they didn't want to play. The statement that USC put out gave a little bit too much credence just on the medical. I think it was more of a cumulative effect. You know, the players are kind of like, I don't know if this is the thing we want to do. Obviously, the parents want to see the players. You know, I think there was a combination of things rather than just being like, oh, the medical says you can't play right now.
Yeah, I had heard similar things to Shotgun. A lot of what I heard was like, people don't really understand the toll it took on the team mentally to play in this type of environment and very isolated in that sense. And it's hard. I think it it needs to be a nuanced discussion, because on one hand, I can see why it looks bad from a PR standpoint. You know, if it was the Fiesta Bowl, I don't think we're talking about them opting out right now. And you have a team that wrote a letter to the governor of California with the hashtag "we want to play," and then suddenly it looks like they don't get the bowl that they want, and then they don't want to play anymore. So I get that that looks bad, but at the same time, these are student athletes who don't have school right now. They finished at Thanksgiving, so they're not in school anymore, and there's nothing really, you know, the CFP is made up. There's nothing really to play for, to travel for an Alamo Bowl. So I get that, and what Chalkin alluded to, and that's kind of what I've heard from team sources as well. So I get both sides, but at the same time, I'm not inclined to get frustrated at players who are kind of just done at this point, you know?
Yeah, I would say my initial reaction was, you get it. Like, hey, the players have gone through a lot. They would like to go see their families for the holidays. I tweeted that out, got some weird responses, or maybe not positive responses. But you think about it, and you do talk about that. Like, well, you did write that letter that you wanted to, you know, play. And
yeah,
this is an opportunity to play. You only got six games in. This is an opportunity for a bowl game and to, you know, play another team from another conference, get the bad taste out of your mouth, losing to Oregon. You would have played Texas, Todd Orlando going back to play against his old team, and Craig Nivar. I mean, I think there are going to be some really good storylines from doing a bowl game. The student athletes are that. They're not getting paid for this. They've been quarantined. They've been sacrificing a lot. And if they really didn't want to play, I'm not going to stand. No criticism towards them. I can guarantee you there's a bunch of the guys on this team, though, that did want to play. And if this was an opportunity for USC to figure that out, players that didn't want to play could have opted out. And if there was guys that were, you know, tested COVID positive over the week that we didn't hear about going into the game and they weren't going to be able to play, fine. There's some guys that got hurt. If you had to play with Matt Fink, hey, you know, he's your quarterback too. He won a game against Utah. I mean, I feel like if it was going to be possible at all to let those players that did want to play, give them an opportunity to play. You didn't look really good. Get some practice in. Try to make this team better. If you're really talking about winning championships, are you going to be better by opting out of a bowl next year, or are you going to be better by playing one and trying to get, you know, a better taste in your mouth than what it is? And the problem is the optics are bad. It's instant. You're going to hear from like the media critics, you know, instantly, the fans that are really upset. They just wanted to avoid losing another game. They didn't want to have you don't want to see Carol Folt tweet something out and get absolutely ratioed again about what's going on with the football program. By playing another game, you are opening yourself up. USC had a lot of opportunities to lose and avoided them all up until Friday night. I mean, easily this could have been a 2-4 team, just by looking at the way, you know, those games went. And do you want to play another good Power 5 team that was good enough to make a bowl game? You weren't sure who it was going to be, but it could have been like an Iowa State. It could be a Texas, and looks like it would have been. And give yourself another opportunity to lose. I'm not saying that's why, but you can see the optics are pointing towards that too. So that's why it's a tough one. If it's all the players, and all the players said, hey, we don't want to play, no complaints there. We had a podcast with Harvey Hyde today. It's pretty critical about the decision. But if it is some sort of like, you know, this is just the best way to avoid more bad press, I just don't like it. Because I know there's some guys out there that would want to play. And a lot of the families that would have had the opportunity to see their kids play, because you could actually go to a bowl game and watch, unlike the games here in California. Sure. So, I mean, it's a tough one. If it's like unanimous by the players, fine. If it's not, and there's enough players that wanted to play, they could have played a game, I think that's what they should have done.
I think one of the issues, though, is it sounded like they were getting closer and closer to that 53-man minimum.
That was notable in the press release.
When you include injuries in there, because Keaton Slovis, Amon-Ra St. Brown, it wasn't just, hey, you lost a guy off special teams. You were losing some star players there. So, you know, you start, when you get closer and closer to that, and then if you go through the month and suddenly you get a couple positives late, all right, have you just wasted this time when players could have been? You know, if suddenly you play in the Alamo Bowl and I think it's the 29th, and on the 27th you test and guys come up positive and you fall below the threshold, and now you've, you know, wasted the opportunity for guys to be home for the holidays. I think that depending on how close they were there, because Keaton Slovis was out, Amon-Ra St. Brown, both those guys had shoulder injuries, they were going to be questionable. I was told Elijah Vera Tucker went into the game, was a game time decision on Friday against Oregon. So if you're him and you're likely opting out to go to the NFL, do you really want to put yourself on the line for an Alamo Bowl? You know, he's probably opting out of the game. What are Talano Hufanga and Isaiah Polamau and some of those guys on the defense that may opt out, are they deciding to play one more game? Now you start getting closer and closer and closer to that minimum. And hey, if you have enough players and you have 60 guys still, then yeah, I think you should play. But when you start looking back, when you had the Jordan Iosefas and the Solomon Tuliala-Pupus and, you know, guys that opted out and guys have been injured previously, that number just starts shrinking. The window starts shrinking a lot more. So I don't know the exact number, but it sounded like it was getting a lot closer from the way they worded it in the press conference.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Where do you guys stand on the whole, I mean, this is a sticking point too. If it was the Fiesta Bowl, you wouldn't have been talking about any of this. You would have been practicing and playing. I don't feel like this would. I don't feel like there was going to be an opt out of the Fiesta Bowl.
Yeah, and that's why I said it's hard to look at this and say, well, you just didn't get the bowl you wanted, and now you're out. Because I do think we're talking about the Fiesta Bowl if they got it, and yeah. So that's where it's hard to make excuses, because I think it's really a pick and choose thing, and then that makes you think of team culture. Is it where you want to go to what you want to do, and then if it's not, you opt out? You know, that's what I'm saying. It's a nuanced discussion, because I still keep going back to the sacrifices put into the season to make it happen. And so if you're not playing for anything really in the Alamo Bowl, do you show up? But then it's like you said, you wanted to play. You're playing, yeah. You know? It's I'm undecided, if you can't tell.
And I'm not going to take everything in that statement as like fact. I mean, we saw when the Rose Bowl moved to AT&T Stadium, they used one of the rising COVID cases in Los Angeles County as one of the reasons.
Yeah.
Do you know where it's worse? Where it's going. Like, okay, if you moved it to, you know, Nebraska or something, you're like, yeah, there's less COVID there. They moved to a place that's worse. So then that's just a bull crap excuse. And I feel like some of that statement, you know, we don't know for sure. I think some of it.
Well, the thing that is interesting to me is that USC had been very upfront about their COVID issues prior to this whole time. Yeah. If they had one positive, they put out a statement and put pretty detailed explanation of what was happening. And I had heard coming into the game that there were COVID issues. And that was something that I was trying to track down. And yet we hear about it after the game in the response to why they aren't playing in the bowl game. Yeah. And it's like, you set a precedent of alerting the public about this. And maybe it was a strategic thing. They didn't want to have LA County on their case right before playing a Pac-12 championship game that they thought they were going to win. But at the same time, it just seems, it just does not look good again to mention the COVID issues in your press release about why you're not playing in a bowl.
Yeah, was weird.
They did have players missing from the game. Chase Williams was not there. Keenan Kristen was not there. Isaac Taylor Stewart. Those guys were not in the stadium. So what does that lend that to that? Are they transferring? We don't know exactly. But it seems more it lends itself towards COVID precautions there and potential of contact tracing or whatnot. So those guys weren't in the stadium. So there were players that were not there, and likely due to that reason.
Yeah, I was told that they were quarantining, so there's that. But, that's what I'm saying. It's weird in that sense. And then the notable thing about the roster limit is then you have to also think about opt-outs. I was told that a lot of people who were eyeing the NFL kind of signaled that they would opt out if they did play in a bowl game. So even if they did play, is it really the team that we've known to see in 2020 playing, or is it kind of a mix of starters and guys who step up because of COVID issues, injuries, and opt-outs, you know? And then at that point, is it worth it to go through all that? I don't know.
And again, it comes back to mentality too, just the mental toll, I guess. You know, if you're going into a New Year's Six game and there's prestige, maybe you get over the hump and can push on past that. But going to the Alamo Bowl and, you know, potentially playing Texas, who a lot of those guys have played a couple times, unless there's some bad blood that they have with Texas that they would like to, you know, finish off with a third time, maybe you look at it and you just go, this has been too much. I'm ready to, you know, see the fam and, you know, hang out and, you know, see baby sister or whatever it may be. So I think those things play into it as well. And remember, these are 18 to 21 year olds. I think we forget about that a lot of times.
Yep.
18 to 21 year olds, they go through, you know, their emotions are up and down a lot quicker than most adults are. So, you know, I think that plays into it. We just have to remember those type things are also a factor.
Yeah, for sure. I'm going to jump into calls pretty soon here, and then we'll go into questions. We have a lot of them, so we'll get to them. But as promised, what happens next? Ryan, what? Where does USC go from here? I mean, we get the question every second of every day about what happens with Clay Helton. He's under contract, so it's not like a thing where they have to make a decision. He's the coach unless something drastic happens, and it just doesn't seem like that's happening, at least as we know of right now.
Yeah, I think it would have to be something drastic happening. We've talked about the contract. It's a fully guaranteed, going through 2023, be very expensive to buy him out. I know some people on Periscope pointed out what happened at South Carolina, what happened in Auburn. Yeah, I mean, they're big buyout, over $20 million to buy out Gus Malzahn, and you might promote your defensive coordinator as the head coach. Like, wow, like that's a lot of money to spend on a dude you already had in-house. But could that happen? I would have said almost, you know, I think it's in the, you know, high 99, you know, like 99% that Clay Helton's going to be back in 2021. That was my feeling kind of coming into this. Then USC goes 5-0, and you're like, yeah, there's no way he's going to be fired at this point. But it was such a disaster Friday night, and it just kind of exposed everything that had gone on during the season. It sort of made those, like, close wins that could have been losses almost like they were a lot closer to losses than even what they were. And I feel like at that point you're like, okay, what are we doing here? Is this really what you want to go into a full season of? And knowing there's going to be a lot more opportunities to lose games, the way USC played this year, if they played a 12-game schedule, there would have definitely been more losses for sure. Obviously, if you played the kind of teams that were originally on the schedule, do you want to face that again next year, or do you want to make some kind of move? I just felt like it was going to be a really hard thing to do unless there's some big boosters. Like, there's going to be some big money that would have to come in and do something. But I my gut is we're going to be dealing with the same sort of thing next year. I think Clay Helton's going to be sticking around, you know, barring some kind of crazy happenings between now and then.
Yeah, Phil asked a question. He said, why doesn't one of these big money boosters step up and pay Helton's buyout? Do they care enough? You know, at Auburn, they do. At South Carolina, they do. In the SEC, it just means more. Does anyone at USC, do they care that much? That's a big question, mm-hmm. Especially now. Like, USC, it doesn't seem like USC, the school, has the money to do it. You know, even if they wanted to, it just, with everything else that has gone on the school around the school the last 5 years, we talked about this in the past, but with everything that's gone on, with a pandemic right now, with money not coming in, you're not adding income, then I don't think the school can do it. It would require a booster to do that. Now, does anyone care enough to step up and do that?
Yeah. As far as the future goes, though, I don't feel there's going to be coaches being fired. Assistant coaches, that's happened the last 2 years, just complete turnover. So if anyone's replaced, it's going to be because my guess is they left on their own accord. They wanted to go somewhere else. Graham Harrell gets hired somewhere, something like that. You could see that happening. The thing to watch will be, are any USC coaches going to get poached to go somewhere? Most likely, you know, the highest candidate up there is Graham Harrell. And do players opt out? There's going to be the transfer rule. Are you going to see some players transfer out of the program that are frustrated? I think it's pretty likely that it's going to happen. But also, I think USC is going to go after players. There's gaps. There's holes out there. Left tackle. Elijah Vera Tucker is likely going to be gone. What are they doing there? They probably need another inside linebacker if they can find one, or it depends on who guys are coming back. Defensive tackle. I mean, I feel like you're going to, you know, they definitely could use another running back, and there could be some issues there with USC's troubles running the football. So it's going to be like roster watch, and then, you know, who does, if someone leaves on the assistant coaching staff, who will Clay Helton get to replace him?
And if someone leaves on the assistant staff, does that create some more turnover? You may really like your position coach and not the head coach or not the coordinator above. So if someone does leave, there might be a lot of roster turnover. We'll see. It'll be interesting to see. We've seen some schools go through a lot of turnover in this season with the pandemic and everything else. And if the NCAA, now that they're going to allow everyone, you know, the one-time transfer rule, it sounds like, then you could see a lot of guys leave and some guys come in as well, because there's so many people in the transfer portal.
Mm-hmm. We shall see. So stay tuned. It's a ever-evolving situation. It is, but it isn't. It's an odd dynamic there. Let's jump into our callers who have been patiently waiting. I appreciate y'all. First off, let's go to Dave from Iowa. Hello, you're live on Tunnel Vision.
Hi, Dave from Iowa once again. Yeah, Friday's game, we didn't win because, you know, our head coach isn't focused on the trenches. So, you know, not much of a shock right there. But to point out in terms of talent versus talent, aside from, you know, Kayvon Thibodeau and D.D. Lenore, who, you know, made the crucial plays, number 12, number 19, number 24, they're the ones that made some of the biggest plays in that game. All those guys are three starters coming out of high school. So I don't mean to disrespect this guy, but to call out Gerard Martinez, I don't think Cristobal is just a recruiting coach. He obviously knows how to develop these players. And by the way, these guys were freshmen and sophomores. So clearly Oregon does have something coming up. And with Cristobal signing that new contract and him not leaving, looks like we're going to have to be chasing Cristobal instead of, you know, other teams chasing us.
Hey, Dave, thanks for the call. Yeah, no, I think he's done a pretty good job there. I don't know if he's going to be an elite coach or a great coach, but he's developed players. I mean, he's an offensive line guy. That's going to add a layer of toughness. He's recruited some of the, you know, the better offensive linemen on the West Coast and been able to take those guys away from USC. And they're going to get the occasional five-star, the Kayvon Thibodeau and the Justin Flows. But they're also going to get some, you know, local, you know, West Coast three-stars and make them way better players. And I think we saw that last night. They were definitely the better coach team. They looked like the better prepared team. And they played like the better team on Friday night.
The thing Cristobal has done really well is hire good coordinators.
Yeah.
I think Moorhead was a great addition as the offense coordinator. And Avalos is a guy who's gotten several looks, from some mid-major schools that are looking for new head coaches and stuff. Last season, we'll see if he's on the move this year. He's a young coach and does some really good things for their defense. And like I said, they look like they knew exactly what USC was going to run their entire, first, three drives or so.
Mm-hmm. Alrighty, let's go to a shotgun favorite. It's Hugo. Hello, you're live on...
Everybody's favorite.
Sure, you're live on television.
Yo, what's up? How you guys doing?
Good.
Good, Hugo.
Okay. Look, man, check it out. I wasn't even going to say nothing, but Ryan has been talking about it a lot, right, with this, replacing Helton, man. You know, that we know that's what we want. We know he don't even represent or anything. He's nothing like L.A., how we are out here. Rough, tough, in your face, none of that. You know what I'm saying? He don't represent us, man. That's what really, really frustrates us people out here in South Central. Because he just doesn't look like that. Like somebody that represents us or acts like us or anything. Anyways, look, Aranda, Mike Aranda, Tom Herman, or the LSU offensive coordinator, boom, give me them guys. Now, look, here it is. I'm not mad at the players. I feel like all these games in 13 days, that was too much for these cats, man. It was just too much. I feel like we were set up. I feel like the conference just did not look out for us. It was just it's too much, man. And now, Shotgun, whenever you talk to Graham Harrell again, hey, puff your chest out. Puff your chest out, my man. Because you know what? That offense looked like you know what. All right? That thing did not flow. I'm watching Ohio State over here. Maybe it's not the same, but they look similar in the shotgun, three receivers over here and this and that, right? But they were flowing. It looked like they were hitting their receivers right on in stride, right off the route. All that, and they ran the ball for like 4,700 yards in one game. You know what I'm saying? Okay? So this is what this needs to happen. Shotgun. This is what needs to happen. Okay? Either Harrell needs to go or do something more realistic and let the offensive lineman coach, Drevno, go. But we need some answers. Either one of those two, one of them needs to go, okay?
Thank you, Hugo. Got to cut you off there.
He's gone off there, yeah.
I know.
I think talking about the offense line is where the big deficiency is on the offense. They just get – not that they don't do an okay job. They did an okay job protecting Slovis. There were a couple times when they just let guys go by on the edges. But the interior guys getting pushed back. And Jasper actually had a good comment. Jasper is one of our regular commenters on YouTube. He said, do you think that the way that they recruit tackle bodies, and Clay Helton has said this over and over again, in the last couple, we always recruit tackle bodies. That's part of the reason why you don't have really good interior guys that can push forward and get you some yards on the ground. maybe that has something to do with it, where you got guys that are used to being pass blockers and used to, you know, dropping back or getting out in space and trying to block, you know, guys, rather than being the hog mollies in the middle of the line, pushing guys forward on those short yard situations when USC has been getting pushed back and struggling with, you know, that's a valid question right there and one I hadn't thought of. But the offensive line, they didn't create enough push at all. The run game, I thought, was showed some good signs early. I mean, Stephen Carr ran for 35 yards in the first half, which is perfectly fine. That's all you need from the running game. You know, those little 9 carries, it's like, you know, it's not a great yards per carry average. It's almost 4 yards, which that's all you really need from this offensive line and run game. Give you a little bit. Just take away the negative plays. If you can get 4 yards and now it's 2nd and 6, it changes the whole dynamic. But they just can't consistently do that. In the second half, they weren't really able to do really much of anything. And, you know, they finished the game. I think that I tweeted out the stats yesterday. I was looking at the yards after contact. The running backs had 7 yards before contact. That's how many yards they gained on I think it was 25 combined carries between Marquis Stepp and Stephen Carr. 25 carries, your offensive line gave you 7 yards before contact. That's not going to do it.
No, the rest are going to, yeah, you got to get them on your own. Yeah. Hey, Hugo, I got to buy you a beer when this pandemic's over. So I'll call you. Yeah.
There you go, Hugo. I'm going to go to Scott. Hello, you are live on Tunnel Vision. I believe you have a question about the offense for Shotgun.
Yes, Kelly, how you doing?
Good. How you doing?
Yeah, Shotgun, real quick, what's our fix for the offense? And thank you for taking my question.
Okay. Thanks, Scott.
I mean, I think it starts with the offensive line and being able to run it effectively. Now, it doesn't have to always, your running backs don't have to run for over 100 yards. You don't have to, it doesn't always even have to be the running backs. The quick screen game. You know, those type of things they went away from in some of the, and that's game planning based on an opponent, but that needs to be a part of it. The extended running game, as I call it, you know, if you can throw it out to Brew McCoy and pick up 6 yards with a wide receiver screen, you got to be able to do that and do that consistently so that you can start with shorter second downs. That's the biggest thing to me. When they threw it on first downs, you know, they were able to pick up some yards, but you have to do it consistently enough so that it can, in effect, be your running game. So when you're able to run the ball, you know, pick up 4 yards of carry on the run, now it's 2nd and 6, or throw those screens and pick up 5 yards as well. You know, those type things, I think that changes, you know, just the down and distance areas change everything. And then red zone efficiency. It was much better in the second half of the year, but it hits them really big in this game. You get down to the 4-yard line, you get 1st and goal from the 4, you got to score. You can't win championships kicking field goals getting down the 4-yard line. So that was a big one. And these are the small things that mattered in this game. You know, USC had, 3 turnovers on Keaton Slovis interceptions. Mm-hmm. They had another turnover, if you want to count that punt tackle that Talanoa Hufanga had. You had the ball back, you gave it back to him. That counts as a turnover to me. And they scored points on that. So that's 3 other points there. You miss a field goal. That's 4 points on a potential touchdown on the 1st and goal. That's 3 points on, Talanoa's, and 3 points on the missed field goal. 10 points, you win the game.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. One of the weird things, too, I got a text from a friend that, you know, more of an NFL guy, but does a lot of college evaluations, was just like, why are they so condensed in the offensive line? There's no spacing there. Usually in this kind of offense, you're trying to space things out a little bit. They're not physical enough to keep it all mm-hmm. tight. And I'm like, that's a really good point, you know. And the way that the run plays are designed, you know, handing it off sideways when the quarterback is absolutely no threat to run, it just seems like schematically they could do some things to just kind of help out and make, you know, help the offensive line and make it a little better, a little easier to run the football. I'm not sure why they're not doing that, but it seems like there's some issues schematically with that.
With the run game, you know, I think it's more – you have to squeeze things together, especially in those short yard situations, because they let guys through too often. You know, they just get beat up front. And that's a lot of times the interior guys. The nose tackles really had a day, similar to BYU last year, where they just continued to push Brett Nealon back into Keaton Slovis's lap. That was part of the reason why it felt like Keaton Slovis was under pressure all the time. It wasn't necessarily that someone had beat a guy, but they just pushed everything back on him, and you can't step into a throw. And there were times where that happened. Now he's trying to escape out to the outside. I thought Oregon did something really interesting as far as their pass rush. They rushed 3, but then they had 2 linebackers that were basically sitting there on the guards to occupy the guard. So the guard, if the guard turns to go help out and double team Kayvon Thibodeau, well, that guy's going to come and then try to attack Keaton Slovis. But if he doesn't, they're just standing there waiting to jump up and try to swat a ball down, try to take away that short yardage passing over the middle, but also just to occupy those guards to create those one-on-one opportunities on the edges. And, you know, AVT wasn't 100%. He got beat a couple times. Jalen McKenzie struggled on the other side, especially when they put Thibodeau over there. So I thought the game plan up front was really, really nice by Oregon to attack this USC offense line that way.
Alrighty, we have two more callers in the queue, so I'm going to jump to them, and then we'll jump into questions. I believe Cameron from Frisco has a question about Tim Drevno. Hello, you are live on Tunnel Vision.
Hello, Keely, Shotgun, and Ryan. I know it's been a long time since I've come to call in to Tunnel Vision. I first want to say thank you for a great season of covering the team. Give a shout-out to you, Keely, for our hashtag stock neutral.
Yes, thank you. Woo!
And then I want to give a shout out to Ryan for his great takes throughout the season on Trader Joe's. Throughout this Christmas holiday, I bought in those Christmas tree cookies, and I bought 4 boxes just for the month, and I'm down to my last box.
Oh, yeah.
There you go.
So I want to say thanks for your Trader Joe's takes throughout the whole year. Shotgun, I first want to say that you are the real MVP of this podcast because you were the only one to actually say Washington would actually win the North. They technically did win the North. So I wanted to say Shotgun Spratling MVP. wanted to boost up Shotgun's ego because we all love when Shotgun Spratling boosts up his ego, especially on the Family Feud podcast. So
no.
That was perfect.
Exactly. Okay, so what's your question?
Okay, so the question is on Tim Drevno. We saw on this Friday against Oregon, this offensive line looked terrible. Just the one-on-one matches with Kayvon Thibodeau against AVT and Jalen McKenzie just looked like he just fell on his butt every time. It was embarrassing to watch. It was so embarrassing to watch this offensive line just look like they were just better off just falling on the ground and just hope for the best. So my big question is, of all the members of the coaching staff, who do you think will actually get let go? Would Mike Bohm make a move of kind of forcing a Clay Helton hand on, you know, kind of getting rid of somebody off the coaching staff? I'm thinking really the solution is Tim Drevno. I think Tim Drevno needs to go because look at this offensive line. They haven't improved. We haven't seen really their technicalities get shown off, and they really aren't that doing that really a great job. And we can just tell. I mean, we only got like an Austin Jackson, a first-round pick, and that was a 5-star recruit. And now we're getting the 4s and the 3-stars and everything. So we need an offensive line coach that's just going to develop this offensive line. I know Shotgun hates the hypotheticals. Now he hates just like all those hypotheticals of who would be a great offensive line coach for USC. So I'm thinking, you know, give me the O-line coach from Bama, Clemson, Ohio State, Iowa, Wisconsin. Like, give me one of those guys that just knows how to just bring out the brute force of just an offensive line. Just make them tough.
Okay, Cameron, I'm cutting you off. I'm sorry.
I think if you saw this.
Thanks, Cameron. Appreciate it. Yeah, so that's the Cameron show there for a little bit. So we already talked about, like, didn't really feel like there was going to be any assistant coaching changes. But if you said, hey, you have to pick somebody, who is it likely to be? It's probably not going to be any of the new coaches that came in last year, right? You're not probably letting any of the defensive guys go. You're not letting Sean Snyder go. It's going to have to be someone that's been around. Is it Mike Jenks or Kerry Colbert or Tim Drevno? Like, those would probably be the only three you could choose from. The offensive line certainly has been under criticism. So I guess if they were going to make a move, it could be that. The issue I had from the beginning was that, you know, he wasn't someone that was coaching an offensive line that's run the air raid system, and they kind of made it be like, yeah, that doesn't really matter that much. Maybe it does. I'm not sure. But like I said, I don't think they're going to make any changes on the staff, my guess. But if they had to make one, he would be definitely one of the candidates. I don't know. What do you think, Shotgun?
I mean, he's also – his title is the run game coordinator too. So if you look at it and the run game really struggled, then if you're going to someone, just – like you said, from the beginning, it was surprising that he was kept on with the fact that he didn't have any experience in the air raid. But, you know, weirder things have worked out. Yeah. So you looked at it, and there's a big question mark still with the offensive line. So I don't call for anyone's head besides Larry Scott's at all times. But, you know, because there's families and everything else involved. But it seems like it doesn't fit perfectly there. If they were to make a move on the offensive line, then you would look for them to hire someone. I know a lot of people have thrown out Iowa, and he just said Clemson or Alabama. You need someone that has some experience in an air raid offense, yeah, because it's different. You're not pushing forward all the time. You're not, you know, going under center and third and one type of situations. So you need guys that, you know, can teach what it is that's going to happen with Graham Harrell's air raid. I thought that, like I said, the offensive line didn't play as bad as I thought on Friday when I rewatched the game. You know, they gave Slovis some time. The DBs, it was a lot of drop six coverage. You know, like I said, they were keeping those linebackers there to occupy, but also kind of play a short zone. So it's a mini drop eight coverage. But it was three guys that were pass rushing primarily, and they were able to get pressure, and that's an issue. And so if you got to clean those type of things up, even if, you know, your star lineman is, you know, a little banged up, the other guys need to be able to help out with him. You know, they kept Stephen Carr in there a lot, and he was great pass blocking. You know, there were a couple times where he just dominated blitzers coming through the edge. But there's at times you need to change your system up and say, all right, we got to keep a tight end in to help out whatever Kayvon Thibodeau is, because he's killing us right now. I think he had 12 pressures in the game, according to Pro Football Focus.
Wow, that's a lot.
That's a huge number. So, you know, you got to change some things up, and I didn't think that they did that. Now, is that on Tim Drevno or is that on Graham Harrell? You know, that's also a question.
It's hard to say. I mean, they have to figure that stuff out in the film room, so I think they will. CT.
When?
SUJ.
When are they going to figure it out in the film room?
I don't know. I mean, for the offseason, like, as far as, like, if what they want to do going forward.
Like, you had a guy like A.J. Epinesa last year, elite pass rusher on the edge. What happens? He hurts your quarterback. Are you going to change things? Hey, you should look at it and go, well, look at this Iowa game. When we face an elite pass rusher again, what can we do differently?
Yeah.
And they faced one. They didn't do anything different.
When you're talking about, are they going to make changes on the staff or whatever, like, they have to come up to that. Like, whose fault is this that they haven't fixed that problem? CTSUJ on Periscope said, there is no run game to coordinate. Ouch. But that's fair. You know, it's not been very good.
Sinke on YouTube said, Shotgun is going to snap one day. A hypothetical is just going to push him over the edge. And I thought that was funny.
Yeah, thinking about it real quick, do you remember after the first two games, USC ran for 170 yards? And that's what Clay Held talked about, is like, that's what they want to do all the time. And it just like fell off a cliff from that point.
Yeah, it's weird.
So weird.
Yeah. I mean, they were playing Arizona, and Arizona's terrible. So that was part of the reason why they were able to run that game. But UCLA, I thought they should have been able to run the ball. They ran okay against UCLA.
Oregon has a terrible run defense. And they, you know, Oregon State ran for 300-something yards against the Oregon defense. And USC couldn't run for 38. Like, what?
Here's my response.
He's shrugging. Yeah. I have to translate that or relay that. One more caller in the queue, and then I'll get to questions. We're already at the top of the hour.
Holy cow.
It's our guy, Bobby. Hello, you are live on Tunnel Vision. Thank you for waiting, Bobby.
Thank you, all three of you, and plus Trevino and Gerard Martinez. I have to thank you from the bottom of my heart and find the words to be so sincere to say thank you to all five of you for being the greatest grief counselors I could ever imagine. I really appreciate you guys and the work you guys do.
Thanks, Bobby. What's your question for the team?
I got three analogies that came to mind today. USC's air raid offense belongs or reminds me of milk cartons that has a previous expiration date. No, then I start thinking about milk cartons, and I think there should be a picture of USC football with the caption, "Have you seen where our running game is?" That's and finally, the thing that I like on women, or attracts me to women right away, I notice is their lipstick. Graham Harrell's shade is dull and worn out. Tim Drevno's shade is trite. Todd Orlando's good for special occasions, for example, the fiery red. Oh, wait a minute. Haven't we tried like 11 different shades of assistant coaches? Can't we learn that lipstick doesn't belong on a Hilton? Thanks, guys. Appreciate you.
Wow. There's
Bobby,
a lot of mixed...
I thought there was a question there. Sorry about that. But yes, there's a lot of analogies there. Can't really match you, Ryan, though.
There's only 3 points. Sometimes Bobby's like, I got the 10 points I want to get to today. I'm like, all right, Bobby.
I mean, his last point is basically that it doesn't matter what shade of lipstick that you put, being assistant coaches on Hilton, you're still putting lipstick on a pig.
Yeah.
True.
It's hard to argue, too. I mean, you've made a lot of assistant coaching changes, and a lot of the stuff looks exactly the same. And
Yeah, and that's the thing is there's positives on the offense. You know, I can see the air raid offense working.
Yeah.
There's positives on the defense. I thought the defense actually played really well. You know, they were put in a hole by the offense with the turnovers, but they played really well. I mean, Oregon gained, what, like 100 yards less than the USC offense? It was just the turnovers really did the defense in there. Now, there was a couple of things about tackling. Let me point out real quick. I don't know if you guys noticed this. The Talanoa Hufanga, he misses the tackle on that first touchdown. You're like, come on, that's a play your best playmaker's got to make, right? Talanoa Hufanga wasn't his guy. He wasn't supposed to be guarding him. So he made that play reading the run and reading the offensive lineman and said, wait a second, they're going to throw it to this guy, and went out there. Because Chris Steele actually, because they did that motion in and then motion back out, and Chris Steele kind of slipped a little bit, and that guy was wide open. It would have just been a walk-in touchdown. Talanoa Hufanga gets out there but can't make the tackle. But I didn't think the tackling was terrible on Friday either. That one really stands out because it's for a touchdown. But USC's defense, they rallied after that 14-0 deficit, and, you know, they played pretty well the rest of the game. The offense didn't really help them out, though.
No.
Mm-hmm. As far as Keaton Slovis goes, I know we've heard a lot about, you know, it was windy, a dry wind, and then, you know, it's a mental thing. It's his changing mechanics. Keaton said he had mechanical issues. Graham Harrell said he didn't. And then I know you and Gerard talked about it a lot on the emergency pod, Ryan, but I mean, is this Keaton Slovis the 3-star coming home to roost? Is like he's this is what he was evaluated as, or is this just a weird confluence of things that we don't really know the full picture?
I think it has to be a confluence of things. There was definitely didn't look like he was as confident as he was last year coming in, not really expecting to be the starter and taking over that role. This was something, you know, it was a weird offseason, but he knew coming in who was going to be the starting quarterback even before JT Daniels transferred out. I think there could have been some more confidence there. And for some reason it was lacking. But I think it's also having more of a, you know, more film on him, having an offseason to study. We've seen, you know, the Washington school beat the Washington State school quite a bit, knowing how to defend the air raid and Mike Leach not really being able to make many adjustments to that. I mean, there's people that have figured it out a little bit more. I think maybe they figured out USC a little bit more. And you're going to still have those explosions. You know, you're going to still have that first quarter against Washington State with 4 touchdown passes, but then you make some adjustments. And if, you know, everything doesn't go quite right, you can have these long droughts without it. And I feel like that's the biggest issue with this offense. I mean, the fact that what's the most points this team scored? Was it 38 this year? Like never even got in the 40s. Is that right? Has that happened? I mean, this team should have scored 50 against Washington State.
Scored 43 against UCLA.
43 against UCLA. Yeah, that was the crazy, the comeback thing.
The comeback thing, you know, like those other games.
Like the other games, too. But, like, you know, some of the teams on the schedule, you should have put up a lot more points than you did. And, you know, the red zone issues that Shotgun had talked about, too, those were there. And that was a real thing. I don't know. I mean, he didn't look quite the same for sure. And I don't think this is now he's a 3-star. This is really the way he is. He showed me he can be an elite level quarterback. But I think a lot of things were happening this year that contributed to that. And I'd be, you know, curious to see what he's going to look like in 2021. But something just wasn't quite right. And maybe like you said, a confluence of a bunch of small things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Shotgun?
It didn't look like he was playing with a ton of confidence. And it started from that first drive on Friday. Just looking at the throws, they weren't very confident throws. And I think he was like, again, Oregon looked like they knew every play the first couple of drives. So he's looking out there and every receiver is covered up. And now suddenly you got Jordan Scott at like 340 pounds coming at you. And you got Kayvon Thibodeau coming off the edge. And they were able to get pressure and hit him a couple times. And every quarterback, you hit him a couple times early, it changes how the game will progress.
Yeah.
And I think that Oregon was able to do that. And then it shook Keaton a little bit. He got back in a rhythm, but you know he was taking some big hits throughout the game. The more hits you take, the more likely you are to throw a ball like he did on that interception, the final interception. Just to me, it looked like he thought that the first down marker was the line of scrimmage marker because he threw it on a line. He's like, I got to get it past that marker to get it out of bounds so that it's not intentional grounding. Didn't realize, you know, because he'd scrambled out of the pocket and gone two different ways, he didn't realize how far he needed to throw it maybe there. Didn't realize how far back he had, you know, backtracked as he was trying to get away from the rush. And instead, he throws it on a rope, and great play by Hill to intercept it, get the tippy toe down. Whereas like I said, Shuck on the other side just tosses one up over the edge, goes over two receivers just over the hands of IPM and just through the hands of Kanai Mauga. If that, you know, if the things changed on those two plays, could have been a different game. Who knows?
Mm-hmm. And for the record, Ryan, USC averaged 33.3 points a game this season, and its opponents scored 26 points a game in 2020.
So I think that's less average than last year, right? I think, you know,
just clicked out with a tougher schedule.
Yeah, I believe so. I mean, yeah, it's just with everyone coming back and all the offensive firepower that was there, they had to score more points this year. Like that just, I mean, that's, you needed to score more points, and yep. And they didn't.
Last year was 32.5 for USC per game, and the opponents scored 29.4 per game.
All right.
So, yeah, so a little bit of improvement on both sides.
Yeah.
You know what's scary, though?
What's up?
The players they're potentially going to lose this year.
Yeah.
And, hey, they're bringing in some quality freshmen in this recruiting class, but are those guys going to step in at the positions you need? At left tackle? At both safety positions? Do you have somebody ready to potentially step in there? Do you have a nose tackle? Is Softser the guy that can step in there, the Alabama transfer? You're looking at some of these positions where they may lose players that decide to move on, and you go, whew, this was the year USC should have won.
Exactly.
With all the veterans they have on that defense, and now they're replacing, and the guys that we expected to be really good, Paliti and Itiote, and you know, the guys coming off the edges, Drake Jackson, and you know, this was the year they should have been really good.
Yep.
And it kind of felt like a disappointment coming into the year, like, oh, they made this could be really bad for them if they miss out on having the opportunity to play this year when this was the year of the cycle, you know, because everything comes in cycles, especially with the way they've recruited recently. It's going to be a cycle. So it's going to be a couple down years. Like Oregon was rebuilding this year, and they beat you. What is it going to be next year when all their young guys are older and you've lost a lot of your veteran guys in that defense particularly? That's a big question.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why I'm saying the season's a failure, because it was set up to win. You were set up to win this season.
Yeah. And in that sense, that's
it's going to be tougher to win next season than this season.
Yeah.
For a lot of reasons. And then the personnel is going to be one of them.
Yeah. Yep. That's a fair assessment, Ryan. Andrew on, let's go into rapid fire, just FYI, because it's 8:11 right now.
Rapid
Andrew
fire.
On YouTube says, if SC can't win the Pac-12 without playing half their conference schedule, how will they ever win playing the full Pac-12 schedule?
They'll eventually do it, but they'll do it with three losses.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, every other year of Clay Helton's tenure, the USC's had at least three losses. This was the first one that wasn't the case, but only six games.
And they won one Pac-12 there. I mean, you can get into the Pac-12 championship game and beat somebody that's better than you potentially. It's not something that's really happened under Clay Helton a lot, but it's a possibility there.
Yeah, and the Rose Bowl year, they actually beat the winner of the North and the South that year, Colorado and Washington. So that was that's
didn't,
a year
didn't play in the Pac-12 championship.
Didn't play, but they had beat in the regular season both division winners, which was weird.
Mark on YouTube said, Talanoa said this week that they've been having lighter practices recently, and again, we saw countless missed tackles. Is it clear by now that Helton will never learn from his mistakes?
We'd heard a little bit of that. Like, they might have backed off this week, and, you know, like Shotgun said, with the three games in 13 days. But at this point, I mean, I would, if that's what really happened, I would disagree with that decision. Like, if you're going to play, you got to practice like you mean it, not we're going to back off. And it looks like they backed off.
Well, the problem is I don't think that there's been lessons learned about how to manage bodies while also not dropping off in production once you get to the game. I think bowl games have proven that, you know, people saying, oh, he knows what's right for our bodies. He's giving us rest. And then they come out really flat.
Yeah.
And so you have to question, is that something that played into this as well?
Yep.
I don't think they've really mastered the whole like veteran day off.
Yeah.
Like certain guys get a day off. Not the entire team needs to not practice hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jasper Smith says, wasn't Helton in charge of the discipline penalties coming into this season? Just checking, because it seemed that they had the same bonehead penalties as compared to prior years.
Yeah, technically, that was last year that he was going to take over that.
Right. So you assume he still is, but I think they were last in penalties in the Pac-12. There was a meme that was going around. People were tweeting it out like constantly. So, yes, the irony there, after he talks about, you know, they want to run the ball for 170 yards a game. They don't. After he talks about penalties and turnovers are going to be my department, and then they stink afterwards. Yes, you can see the irony there.
Keely and I have said that they have been able to identify issues. Correcting them has been a different problem.
Yep. Jasper Smith says, looking ahead to next season, who's going to start at left tackle?
I'm going to guess Cortland Ford will be the guy. I think they like Ford, Mannheim, you know, Mannheim and stuff, but I think Ford's going to probably end up being there, unless they get a transfer, and they'll probably be on the market for a transfer.
I think that's the on the roster right now. I think that's your best guess. I would have said Liam Jimmins. You know, coming in this year, I was really high on him, but he has not played very well this season.
Yeah.
Oh.
David on YouTube says, "How will the loss against Oregon affect recruiting?"
Not much right now, but you know, the whole "Take Back the West" thing, what you were talking about, hyping things up. Like, I don't think you can use that hashtag anymore. So, I don't think it's going to help. I mean, you're trying to pass Oregon, who's been ahead of you the last couple of classes, and it doesn't matter for this class as much, but for 2022, I think it can be a thing.
Yeah.
Take Back the West next year.
Yeah.
It's a new hashtag.
Facebook, if you want to throw in some questions, do that. I know you guys are chatty, but any questions, I'll be sure to try and read them.
NorCal Trojan says, "Is there any chance USC moves on from Clay?" We've talked about that a zillion times. It's a very slim chance, I think, at this point.
Mark on YouTube said, "Did USC ruin Drake Jackson by having him lose all that weight? He doesn't have the short area quickness to be a Nuosu, Yuchenna Nuosu, like 245-pound outside linebacker. What made him great was his athleticism relative to his size."
That's a tough question. He didn't accomplish what he did last year. Obviously, a shorter season, but he did have some really big plays. Do you want him to put his hand down a little bit more? Maybe like mix it up a little bit more, I think, because he basically, beginning of the year, he put his hand down a few times and then basically just went to stand up almost entirely. So I think I would mix it up a little bit more. And, when they go to their wide sets and, they bring in Nick Figueroa as the nose tackle and Hunter Eccles and Drake Jackson on the edges and have Raymond Scott in there, that dime package, the 3-2-6 they have for long third down situations, Drake Jackson at nose tackle and use his speed there against an interior lineman, I think, would be an interesting idea. They did some different things with him. They used him in coverage and stuff. He got an interception. So it's a hard thing to judge for me on this one because I can see it both ways.
Fat Bank on YouTube says, "Why has the bar been lowered for USC's football program?"
Ryan, you want to handle that one?
It's poor leadership. I don't think the bar's been lowered from the fans' point of view. I think they have, somewhat realistic expectations for it. It's really just been poor leadership in the athletic department, hiring the athletic directors they have that were just incompetent and hiring head coaches that didn't have great resumes. So you had a job opening and you hired someone whose resume didn't really match the job opening and you have poor results. You kind of understand why. You want to, you need a CEO, you try to get an experienced CEO. USC didn't do that. And now you're seeing struggles.
Mm-hmm. We had a question in the same vein from Eric on Facebook who said, "Why is USC okay with mediocrity?" I think from a school perspective, admin perspective.
I really think it's the leadership before. It's just you're kind of protecting your own interests. Like, I think a lot of the fans just assumed, hey, the athletic director, the most important thing he wants to do is win national championships. And they'll go out and hire a head coach that would do that. Well, you have previous administrations. There's a lot of people there that didn't want to get. They wouldn't have rehired Pete Carroll because Pete Carroll wielded too much power. So if you want to like literally think that the athletic director or the people in the department are feeling the same way I do, hire whoever you need to, spend all the money you want to win a national championship. It hasn't been that way. I'm not sure what it is now. I think they're going in the right direction as far as leadership there goes. But that's not the way it was before. They didn't want to bring in a powerful head coach because they would wield a lot of power. And what did you end up hiring? Someone that he's a chain of command guy in his own words. Pete Carroll is in a chain of command guy. Nick Saban, Dabo Sweeney, they're not chain of command guys. Urban Meyer's not a chain of command guy. They wouldn't have hired someone that wasn't a chain of command guy, and now you see the results you're getting.
In that sense, Bobby says, "Why won't affluent boosters or alumni step up?"
I don't know. I'm not one. You're going to have to ask them.
Yeah. Now,
whatever, Ryan. You're an influential booster.
Not an affluent booster.
You're not a booster at all. You have to sign that on the paperwork.
I mean, I don't know how rich you have to be to literally go, what do you need? A $25 million check that you are basically going to flush down the toilet just to move Yikes. On. Like, that's a big ask, no matter how rich
you are. In a pandemic.
Yeah. But the rich dudes in the pandemic
sure,
are probably still
sure they're fine.
Fine.
But yes.
But you then also have to pay the new coach and the new staff and all that. So it becomes a hefty...
It's not as easy as it
there.
Appears to be. I'm going to go in a two-part question. One, so Ryan can think about it, and then ask the second question to Shotgun, so Ryan, you can think about it. First off, Ryan, Andrew says, if SEC season was a cooking dish, what would it be? Go ahead and think of your analogy.
Okay.
Shotgun. SNS Productions wanted to know, did AVT's draft stock drop after the performance against Thibodeau?
It definitely is not boosted. However, if scouts also know that he was playing injured, that might play into it, and I don't think it'll drop necessarily if that is known by the scouting community. But, you know, like I said, he was a game-time decision from what I was told going in, so that probably played into it a little bit. I did see him a couple times kind of hopping on his legs a little bit after plays, so I don't think that was false information that was provided to me. I don't think it helped him. I think this could have been a big, you know, opportunity to say, oh, look, we think Kayvon Thibodeau is going to be a dude in the NFL, and look, he just stonewalled him over and over. That would be a great opportunity to add, you know, significant tape because he hasn't necessarily played that type of guy. So there are going to be some question marks. So it may drop him a little bit.
As far as the what Neil, yeah. This is tough, but I'm gonna. The only thing that popped in my head was like, remember that? Now this is gonna date myself. Those old Swanson TV dinners that you would have, that you would heat up. This is, you know, like you would have your little tray in your living room watching your black and white TV or something, eating these, you know, TV dinners.
Maybe you watched a black and white TV.
I think when I was a little kid, we had one.
Wow. Basically,
so, like, quite a while ago. It was like that. So. There were some good parts to it, you know. Like there was, you know, they weren't always great, but there were some good parts. Sometimes it wasn't heated all the way evenly. That little like apple crumble thing would be good at the end, but there was, it was a really mixed bag, and it never was. It never looked. It wasn't as good as what it looked like on the box. So I feel that would be the food analogy.
Hmm. I like it. I'll approve of it. David has an interesting question. I think you alluded to this on the podcast with Harvey Hyde, Ryan. He said, let's face it, if you had a son who was talented enough to think about the pros, would you send him to USC?
USC still puts guys in the pros. I mean, I feel like if you have confidence in your own abilities, it's not like you're going there to get if you don't feel like I'm going there to get developed, but I'm going there because USC has been a factory. They still have the most draft picks of anybody. So it's not like you're going to get seen if you're at USC. So there's still advantages that don't, it doesn't matter who the coach is, if you want to send your kid to USC to go to the pros. So I wouldn't say don't send him to USC because you'll never go to the pros, because that's just simply not true. But Do you want to be, you know, developed? And, you know, there's some coaches where you might be at Iowa State and you have Matt Campbell that's like great at developing guys, but maybe you're not going to be as visible. Now this year he's a lot more visible, but other years he wouldn't be. So you have the visibility at USC instantly. Are you going to get the development? And if that's what you want for your son, then that might not be the right place to go.
Depends on the position.
Yeah.
Who the position coach is, yeah.
Short and sweet.
Well, just the position, you know, and how well that position is being developed. If I have an offensive lineman, you know, probably not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
USC Man 3 is, what's the best case scenario for USC in 2021? Can they be successful with next year's squad and build some momentum? Or would it make a difference for them to play poorly and heat Clay's seat up some more?
Well, no one, the players aren't going to purposely tank, no, if that's what he's suggesting.
They don't have a long enough career to be purposely tanking.
No. Yeah. The Jets won today. Like, they, you know, they might not get Trevor Lawrence anymore.
Yeah. What was that about?
But as far as, like, you
know. It's a lot of Rams.
Yeah. That's so weird. Sam Darnold got the win. That's, you know.
There you go.
But yeah, there's no tanking from. Yeah.
Yeah. That's not a thing. No. Ryan on YouTube said, we have four amazing running backs that any team in the country would love to have. With the lack of running game in this air raid offense, can we expect to see these guys start to transfer? I will say there have been rumbles.
Yeah.
That's what I will say.
Wouldn't be shocked.
It would not be surprising. It wouldn't be my response to that.
No, you wouldn't be like, oh my God, one of the running backs from the run game that couldn't run transferred.
And particularly when it's expected that all four have eligibility remaining. So all four could come back. Now, if you see someone else transfer, you see someone go pro, then maybe you decide, all right, now I'm going to get the bulk of the carries or whatever. But having seen where none of them are like the star guy and there's no one that's like, okay, well, I'm going to step forward and become the star guy next year, then, yeah, it wouldn't be surprising.
NorCal Trojan on Periscope says, my daughter is applying to the engineering school and Hilton is causing me concerns. She won't be teaching any of your classes. I've gone through the engineering school. She'll be fine. So don't worry about it. It's for Turby now. You can go check it out.
There you go. Jonathan on YouTube said, should USC dread opening up 2021 against San Jose State now? Lol.
They're ridiculous. But they're probably not going to have their coach because he's probably going to get hired.
That's going to be the big question for them. But yeah, they've definitely taken a step forward. You know, they had their most successful season ever.
They did, yeah.
Beck says, is JT Daniels' success in a tougher conference due to his own talent or the fact that he was not put in a place to succeed at USC.
He wasn't put in a place. I mean, I said this a million times. Like, everyone's just, the people that were harping on JT Daniels were like, he's terrible. Look what he did in 2018 when he was supposed to be in high school. Like, yeah, he ran the gumbo offense. For the half that we got to see him in the air raid, he looked great. The rest of the season, Keaton Slovis looked great. Matt Fink even looked great. I mean, it's just, yeah, you put him in a good position. He wasn't put in a great position in 2018. There were so many USC fans that weren't having it. Now the same fans are like, see, we made the wrong choice. I'm like, you hated him before, so I don't get it. But no, you got to put him in a good spot. Keaton Slovis was put in a great spot. I mean, Graham Harrell, you can argue whatever. Like, he has a quarterback-friendly offense. It would have been better for JT Daniels if he got to run that. He didn't get to. Now you got to see him running, you know, really revive that Georgia program. So, yeah, that, I just feel bad because people badmouthed him so much, and it was more about what they were running versus who the quarterback was.
Yeah, it wasn't Graham Harrell's fault, which is what the initial question included.
Yeah, I tried to spiffy it up a little bit there, Shotgun. Hip-hop lover John said, Graham wants to run, Graham Harrell wants to run this air raid. Is there one game where we've seen the capability like the Big 12 or even the SEC? We have the elite wideouts, right? Where's the explosive plays? Where's the style points?
Valid question.
You got a quarter of it for Washington State.
You get quarters, but then when there's adjustments, there's, you know, it hasn't been a, we have an answer every time. It's, we got an answer for now. Oh, they made adjustments. Okay, it'll take a little bit of time. Graham Harrell makes some really good adjustments in game, but sometimes it just feels like it takes a little bit of time. It doesn't feel like they're ahead of the other team all the time. And that's when you hear the coaches always talk, well, we saw something different, so it took a little bit of time to adjust to it. It doesn't feel like USC is constantly ahead of the opposition. It feels like they're reactionary. And that might just be this offense. Graham Harrell always talks about it. It's execution base. So basically, whatever the defense does, you know, they let the defense dictate what you're going to do. Okay, well, the defense was in two high, so we need to run the ball. The defense was in one high, so we threw the ball all the time, even though it was the fourth quarter, and they had nine in the box, but it was one high. So we knew we had man-to-man on the outside. Well, yeah. There's times when you need to dictate. Even is it this, can this offense ever dictate, or is it just a reactionary offense? And I think that's an issue with USC right now. That's a problem. That's why you need to be able to run the ball. You need to be able to dictate that. It didn't matter who, well, they had nine in the box. We still were able to run it. We pushed them out of the way. Now that's not happening with this offense.
Yeah.
Antonio says, do you think that sports are a low priority among Pac-12 universities, or do you think that leadership is incompetent? Pac-12 has a ton of top academic universities.
Another good question. And, you know, I think that you look at it and you start wondering, is like, is the Pac-12 going the way of the Ivy League, where they're just de-emphasizing sports and, you know, what's important is the academics? You know, a lot of the Pac-12 schools want to be the Ivy League of the West, but then you look at other sports and, you know, outside of the big money makers, and even in basketball, you know, they're efforts made to be really successful. But all the other sports, all the schools make really big efforts to be really successful. Baseball and you know, all the women's sports and stuff like that. That's why it's the conference championship, because there's so many championships won here. It's just the football one that still is puzzling right now.
Yeah. USC Man 3 said, hey, it didn't mean tanking, but so this team is less talented in 2021. It will be a less talented team in 2021. I think the odds of winning the Pac-12 championship in 2021 will be significantly less than they were in 2020. Because I think, you know, pandemic, all that stuff aside, I don't think USC is going to be as talented. And they typically rely on out-talented people.
I think the way you could put it is the adhesive that is the Band-Aid of talent over some of the mistakes will be less sticky in further seasons.
Well, that's a good answer.
I like it.
Well, thank you. Super OC Home said, what happened on the first interception? Was TV Tyler Vaughn's out-muscled or a flutter pass?
It didn't seem like a flutter pass to me. I don't know what you guys thought, but it didn't seem like Slovis, he didn't step into his throw. He stepped forward and threw towards his right. So I feel like he just didn't, you know, if he moves his feet, and maybe that's because the pocket was being pushed on him a little bit, but if he turns his shoulders and throws it outside, it just was, the accuracy wasn't there. I mean, the placement of the ball, some people said it was pass interference, but I think that was just regular hand fighting. He should have thrown it way more outside, and he threw it way too inside.
Mm-hmm. We have two more callers on the line.
Whoa, really?
Yeah, so I'm going to get to them. It's 8:30. Hello. Yeah,
let's wrap it up.
Yeah, we got to wrap it up. Sorry, guys. First off, let's go to, I believe, Rob from Santa Cruz. Hello, you're live on television. What's your question for the team?
No question. I just want to say I'm an old-time follower of the Trojans. back in the days of John Arnett. That gives away my age, but I just want to comment that Oregon was darn lucky that number 29 was not playing. And I think if he was playing, they would have beaten Oregon. Hmm. And that's my comment.
Thanks, Ron.
The old-time Trojan. I love it. Yeah.
We love our old-timers.
Could have been different. You know, if I was in the game, he does provide a little bit different aspect at the running back position. But I thought Stephen Carr and Marquis Stepp ran the ball well early, and then USC didn't really give them much opportunity with the offensive line. So I don't know how much Vi would have changed there.
Yeah, I mean, he took over in the UCLA game. That's a lot to ask.
Though. Yeah, the individual effort in UCLA, that made a difference, but
the offensive line was giving the running backs in the UCLA game 1.9 yards before contact. Like I said, in this game, there were 25 carries, and there were 7 yards total after before contact.
So with Vi made of much of a difference, it's
hard for me to believe.
Mm-hmm. Alrighty, I'm going to bring up, hold on, sorry, we've got a little bit of a traffic jam. I'm going to bring up Dave from Iowa, who had a question about, I believe it was the pod you had on, the emergency pod. Dave, is that correct?
Yes, Ryan. Towards the end of the emergency podcast, you and Gerard were focused on the whole transfer portal situation. So I'm curious, after this disappointing loss, do you think some of those signees will, or I mean, like in a sense, not in a sense, like maybe second guessing their decision, and instead of, you know, trying to get out of the letter of intent, enroll at USC for one day and then enter the transfer portal since they would be immediately eligible? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, thanks, Dave. No, I don't think that's going to be a thing. I think at that point, if that's early on, I don't think you need to like waste your one transfer. I mean, you could try to get out of it, but we haven't heard of anybody wanting to get out of their letter of intent. It's just mostly be guys that have been around the team. Maybe they weren't playing, things like that. That, you know, when you get a frustrating loss that like this, it can help, you know, hurt the team morale. They've been quarantined for all that time. They opted out of a bowl game. There, you know, there's going to be some upset players. There usually is every year, even on good teams. You know, you see people transfer out. It doesn't matter. Like, not everyone's going to be happy on the team, but you know, you might see a few more this year than we've seen before. But we'll have to wait and see.
Mm-hmm. As far as talent coming up, I believe Akai said, "Who are the young safeties that USC will play if Talanoa and or IPM leave?"
You saw Kalana Makala in there in the game. Max Williams, you could move him backwards if you wanted to. Britton Allen and then Chase Williams are your other guys that are in there. So there's some options, you know, who they like there. You know, I thought Britton Allen might get a little bit more run than he did this year. Dorian Hewitt has played that nickel position, the nickel safety spot. So, you know, if you decide that Max Williams is a guy you want to move back, then you can put him there as well. So there's some options for them if, you know, IPM and Talanoa Hufanga leave. I know LC, our good buddy, Hunter Echols' father, said that I should stop it with the pro talk because SC doesn't have a player on that team that's NFL ready, but Elijah Vera Tucker. He might be right, but that doesn't mean
stop people from going.
Exactly. Yeah. That doesn't mean that there won't be people leaving thinking they're ready, which we've seen time and time again.
There's always at least one.
There's always the George Farmer.
Yeah, that's what I was alluding to. Now, we had a question about, as far as NFL talent, Alexis says, who on the USC roster gets drafted first?
Elijah Vera Tucker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No question.
Matt Simmons says, could you see Miller Moss or Jackson Dart coming in and taking the starting job from Slovis?
You wouldn't think that, but Slovis has got to clear his head and, you know, get back in the game type of thing.
Yeah.
You know, he needs to show some improvement over this offseason. And hopefully he will, you know, the things we've seen from him in the past, he seems like the type of kid that will be able to kind of flush this and go forward. If so, then he's the guy. He's the guy that Graham Harrell really trusts. The difference would be if Graham Harrell leaves, you know, what type of offense comes in and what does the new offense coordinator think of all three quarterbacks?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anything short of Graham Harrell leaving, there's no way. Like, he would have to have his arm amputated for Graham Harrell not to start him next year. So.
Well, we don't hope for that, obviously.
No, we don't want that, obviously. Terrible.
Yeah. Well, just as you throw it out, I have to put it out there and knock on wood.
Like, that's what it would do. Like,
yes, I know. Something very drastic.
Yeah, he could like be hobbled, limping around because he sprains his ankle really badly, but he would still be playing, you know, He's Graham Harrell's guy. He's going to be the starter.
Yes. Ruben says, how does the lack of an efficient running game affect recruiting among top-tier talent? We used to be running back you. Now, not so much.
I mean, really, really good running backs want to go somewhere where you're going to carry the ball more than, you know, six times a game, which has happened, you know, for USC with individual backs. Now, if you're running the ball and your running backs get 15 carries, your primary guy, then I think you can still recruit at that. But you need to be able to run the ball, and you need to show the running backs that you're going to move. They're going to have some holes to run through as an offensive line. And some offensive linemen, you know, are better at run blocking and therefore prefer to go to a system where they're going to run block more. So you may can lose out on some offensive linemen in that way as well.
I mean, I had someone pointed out on Twitter, like, LSU's running the air raid. They ran the air raid basically last year. You know, that's what's going on. Like, USC can do it. And I'm like, yeah, but last year they had, what, Edwards-Helaire ran for over 1,400 yards. He had like 200-something carries. Like, they ran the football too. I mean, look what Najee Harris is doing with – that's an Alabama offense that could throw the ball every down if they wanted to. And they still have, you know, stud running backs that are running the football. You need a little bit more of that balance. And USC's just been so heavy on the pass. And this year, the pass hasn't worked as well. Last year it did, and this year it's not. So not having a run game, I think, has been significant.
Brandon Jones says, what's going on in the weight room? Is the O-line even the strongest position group like they're supposed to be?
I think Parker Lewis is the strongest, I believe.
Yeah. You're really pro Parker Lewis.
Him and, yeah, the putter and the kicker are both pretty buff. I don't know. We're not in the weight room. I don't know. Like, it's,
and we can't see practice either, so it's not like we can weigh in on –
on the weigh-ins.
Oh, well done. A Trojan said, so if we did go bowling, USC would have played Texas in the Alamo Bowl. He's very upset. Why are we not going bowling? The best thing we can do is get revenge on Texas. That will make things a lot better.
I mean, the Pac-12 championship game was an opportunity for revenge and an opportunity to try to take back the West, and that didn't come to fruition. Is it worse if you would lose to Texas versus getting revenge on Texas or whatever? I don't know. But, yeah, that looks like that would have been the matchup because, you know, basically Colorado took USC's place.
Would have been a fun matchup.
Yeah. Yes. Sports
but,
girl.
But also, it should be pointed out real quick, that it was basically going to be, from what I've been told at least, it was basically going to be the players fly in the night before or maybe a day before the game, and then they're basically sequestered in the hotel, and then they go to the stadium, they play, get back on the plane and leave. So it's not like it's the same bowl experience for the players.
Yeah,
so if you're looking for quality of life for your players, the student athletes, it wasn't going to be. It was going to be a work, you know, a business trip, as they like to say. But especially, and bowl game's supposed to be fun. You're supposed to go, you know, last year you go to SeaWorld, you go to the zoo, you do those type of things. It's supposed to be about tourism as well and kind of experiencing the city. This year is just another road game.
Mm-hmm. The weird thing would be, though, like, if you think about USC's schedule this year, was sort of like you're quarantined in your house with, like, you know, a family. Maybe it's a family of five. And you're, like, quarantined and just the five of you together. And you were going to get this opportunity to go visit, like, a friend's house or something. And you didn't have it at all. And that, you know, going to play Texas would have been like, wow, they have all these different – they're doing things differently than us. It's just been this kind of unique experience in this year where – everything was just sort of like, you know, your small group of people. It was like, you know, all the Pac-12, we all were doing the same things. This was a chance to kind of reach out of that. And, you know, that's why I think it's a missed opportunity.
But is it really that different if you're just showing up and playing them and leaving? It's not like...
You get to play, you know...
No, I just meant to the point of, like, you get to evaluate what other people are doing.
Yeah, I mean, you get to see them and, like, you know...
Yeah, I guess.
The biggest thing of missing out on the bowl game is the practices. The practices for the young players, but then you go, well, would USC actually take advantage of them?
Yeah.
Fair point.
That's a good question. SportsGirl35 says, how likely is it that IPM and Hufanga leave? Shoddy, Eagle Eye Shoddy, as we were setting up for instant analysis, noticed two Trojan players standing underneath the goalpost in the end zone, and it happened to be Talanoa Hufanga and Isaiah Polamau, and it looked very similar to me to when Adoree Jackson kind of took a lap around the Coliseum during his after his last game. He was going to declare after that. It seemed very much like we're taking it in for one last time. Whether or not that was one of them taking it in or both taking it in, it definitely looked like that. Shotgun, I know you want to jump in here.
Yeah, I mean, we saw them down there and could recognize them by the hair, you know, even though they went a long way. But they spent a good 10 minutes probably that we noticed them, that they were down there,
yep,
just chatting while the, you know, the field crew was working on the field and stuff. So it did seem like they were you know, having a heart-to-heart and, you know, with your buddy type of thing. And maybe they were even discussing whether or not they should leave or stay. But they, when they were getting to the tunnel, they shared a hug, and it was pretty, a long hug. So that leads me to believe that somebody's gone. I don't know if it's one, I don't know if it's both, but somebody is going to be gone. That pairing will not be back for USC next year.
Yeah.
Now, that's completely reading into a situation, but...
Huggate.
I hate anything with gate.
That's why I said it.
But, you know, that's completely reading into a situation. But Talanoa Funga has made so many plays this year that he has caught people's eye, at least. Now, does that mean that scouts love him? Don't know. He's still a guy that's kind of a tweener. Don't know exactly what position you play him at the next level.
One last question from me. Actually, two. I lied. Brandon Jones says, how is Kyle Ford's doing with his recovery?
Seems like he's doing really well from the videos he's been posting and stuff.
It's good
to
see.
Up running full speed on the treadmill and stuff, up over 18, 20 miles an hour, whatever it is that he runs. So positive sign there. Looking forward to seeing him back on the field. He's a guy that's been putting in a lot of work this season.
Mm-hmm. And then a question we've gotten from multiple people, but it comes from Andrew. Do we get tunnel vision every Sunday moving forward? What is the schedule like going forward?
Sunday away. Yeah, so no more Wednesday shows, I think. I think we'll, if you guys are cool with it, we'll stick with Sunday shows.
Okay. But we'll be taking a holiday hiatus.
I think we're going to take a holiday hiatus, yeah.
There's nothing to cover.
We'll see about those NFL playoff games coming up on Sundays.
Oh, true. We'll see. Look out for Twitter. We'll let you know.
Yeah.
This is a decision on the fly. But we, like Ryan said and what Shotgun said earlier, too, it's like a cliff. We were heading in the signing day, Pac-12 championship, maybe Fiesta Bowl, season's over. It was like zoom, zoom. Yeah. So we're still getting our bearings, too. So
it dropped off, yeah. This will probably be the last one of the year. I'm guessing we're not going to do one until and then we'll kind of reset and figure out where we go from there.
Signing day number two, American Bowl. When people announce where they're going, there will be things to talk about. Don't worry about that. But since it is the end of a season, which is weird to say, thank you all for watching throughout every week. We love talking to you guys. We love breaking things down. Having your engagement on the shows makes it really fun. And we love talking to you guys, whether it's by phone or by comments. Y'all are great and funny, and we love interacting with you. So thanks for watching. And guys, any final thoughts before we wrap it up?
No, yeah. Thank you to everyone. It's been a weird, wacky, year that we didn't know what was going on half the time. We're pretty lucky that we've got to cover the games we did. It did end a lot quicker than we thought, but thanks for sticking with us. We had, over 500 people, I think, watching live tonight. So that's awesome. Thanks so much. We'll keep it going through the off season and answer questions. Who knows? Maybe there's going to be some big news. I don't know. We'll see. It's USC football. It's always going to be something. There's going to be some drop everything story that happens and transfers, whatever it is, guys transferring in, out, who knows, but we'll be here covering it all. Make sure you check out uscfootball.com and watch us right here on Tunnel Vision. So thank you for that.
Yep. Shoddy?
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting offseason to see what USC does. Are they going to make any changes to try to progress, or are they okay with being where they're at? That's the big question. When our next show is to be TBD, maybe there's some breaking news that forces us to have a show, or maybe just when we get to talk to Helton again, because USC canceled him speaking to us tonight like he normally would after a game. So we'll see if we have to wait till signing day to talk to him, or if we get to talk to him before then.
Yep. Alrighty. Happy holidays, everyone. Be safe. Be merry. We'll see you, I guess, in 2021, unless something happens. But that's going to wrap it up for Tunnel Vision. That's Shotgun. That's Ryan. I'm Keely. We'll see y'all next time. Bye.
Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. This Earth Week, you can live stream 7 national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.